Hercules' eyes adjusted to the dim light of the cave. He knew that the lion was back there. He had blocked off the back opening of the cave with a large boulder. There was nowhere for the Nemean lion to go but through Hercules. Hercules aimed his arrow in the direction of the beast. Finally, the lion's impenetrable golden fur caught a shaft of sunlight. Hercules steadied his arm and released the bow. It bounced off the animal's magnificent back, impervious to mortal weapons. The creature didn't even move. Hercules waited. Suddenly, the lion sprung from its spot, straight towards Hercules. In one split second, Hercules had to decide if he was going to run back or run towards the massive creature. Hercules leapt up straight into the lion's grasp. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today we're concluding the legend of Hercules, the greatest of Greek heroes, the demigod who suffered extreme punishment and difficulty throughout his life. Today we'll follow what became of him after he murdered his children while under the spell of Hera, who cruelly induced insanity while he slept. And while we often think of Hercules in conjunction with the 12 labors, and they are certainly his most celebrated achievements, this episode only touches on them briefly so as to dive into the very human trials and tribulations that this demigod faced. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes, including murder and attempted rape. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find episodes on your favorite podcast directory. A new episode will release every other Saturday, so if you enjoy it, subscribe. After Hercules threw his children into the fire under Hera's spell, he was cast out from Thebes, reviled and disgraced. He could have bore the public's fury, but it was Megara's outright rejection of him that brought him to his knees. She wouldn't even look at him, much less speak to him. He had broken her heart, had ruined her life, and beyond that, he couldn't fathom what he had done to his innocent children. To think of it made him want to take his own life. But he knew he must live. He must find a path to redemption. Hercules decided to go to the Oracle of Delphi, the High Priestess. The Pythia would certainly know what he should do. Hercules approached the Temple of Apollo with trepidation. While the oracle was known to give insight on how to proceed with one's life, he had already crossed Apollo once for killing his son Linos. He knew that the gods would be doling out more punishment. The Pythia was waiting for him, perched in her temple chair, draped in exquisite robes. She was still, calm, ready to channel the gods. She had several attendants surrounding her solemnly. "Hello, Hercules," she nodded her greeting, her voice dulcet and steady. "You have spilled your own family's blood. You are a cursed man." Hercules was unsure how to address this. "Thank you for seeing me today," he said, nodding respectfully in return. "I gratefully receive any just punishments from Apollo." The oracle regarded him.
"There is only opportunity to learn, Hercules. You will either grow or you will die. That is how living works."
Hercules nodded his head, even though he wasn't sure that he understood. The temple door suddenly closed. Hercules jumped. The Pythia's eyes rolled back in her head as she slipped into her trance, ready to channel the wisdom of Apollo.
"Pray, Hercules," she commanded.
Hercules lowered his head in supplication.
"Please forgive me, great and mighty Apollo. I will never forgive myself for my actions."
"Silence!" the Oracle of Delphi yelled at him. "Do not insult the god with your desperate pleas and excuses, but train your mind on your wretchedness and atonement."
Hercules dutifully closed his mouth.
Finally, the oracle spoke. Her voice lowered now, shifted, as her body became a tool of possession.
You shall go and serve King Eurystheus for 12 years.
Hercules waited for more, his breath suspended in anxiety, feeling the burden of his fate now living outside of him. The Pythia stood from her chair, her back turned to him as she retreated to her chambers. Her attendants followed behind her, onto more important tasks than dealing with his cursed existence.
Good luck, Hercules, she called after him. And may the gods bring peace to the souls of your children.
Hercules didn't know what to do or say. He sat in the empty temple for a moment, allowing the decree to settle in. Finally, he got up and made his way back out into the world, unsure of what his future held. But he knew that Eurystheus, king of the Tyrians and the Mycenae, had a reputation for being harsh and unkind. He just hoped that his punishment would lead to him becoming a better man and prove to Hera that he was not the scourge she thought him to be. When Hercules was led through the gates of the city, he was greeted by King Eurystheus and his people coldly. They had heard of his transgressions and infanticide, and now he was a pariah wherever he would go. King Eurystheus wasted no time in punishing Hercules.
You shall bring me the skin of the Lion of Nemea, he ordered. It hounds us, terrorizing our hills and our people.
I know of this lion, Hercules responded. It is invulnerable. You give me an impossible task. Eurystheus smiled cruelly.
Yes, murderer. Yes, indeed I do.
Hercules was aware that King Eurystheus's people were whispering. He had received a death sentence. They all knew it.
And should by some stroke of good fortune you should complete this labor and return victorious, there will be more. Don't get too comfortable with living.
Hercules turned on his heel, not showing any reaction to the king's efforts to needle and taunt him. He would return victorious, and he would prove to Megara that he was the man she once knew. He would win her back. The fight had gone on for hours. Hercules stalked the Nemean lion for days, finally following it back to its lair. And now here he was, grappling with its gigantic weight on top of him, knowing that no weapon could subdue or maim this beast. No, he would have to do it with sheer force and willpower. The lion's massive claw swiped at Hercules' chest, immediately drawing a thick line of blood. Hercules howled and clawed at the lion's eyes. The lion clamped his jaw down on Hercules' wrist. Hercules had to do something quickly or he would lose his hand. He quickly wrapped his fingers around the lion's thick, wet tongue and pulled as hard as he could. Hercules continued to pull the tongue until the lion released his grip on his hand. He was suddenly overcome with a divine strength. He was channeling his father Zeus now. It was as if he were an animal himself. Speed, agility, and coordination came together. He was able to know what the lion's movements would be before the lion made them. For just a moment, he was omniscient, a superior version of himself. He didn't let go of the tongue until he ripped it out of the lion's head. Hercules tossed the animal's tongue aside. The lion writhed angrily, trying to knock Hercules out with a blow, but its roars were garbled. It was gurgling, unable to deal with the shock of the injury. The lion thrashed his head, spitting and hemorrhaging blood. Hercules leapt onto the lion's back. The animal tried valiantly to buck him off, so Hercules wrapped his hands around the lion's neck.
the creature was too massive for him to get his hands all the way around, but Hercules identified the sensitive spots on the Nemean lion's throat and choked it. The lion collapsed to the ground, dead. Hercules jumped off the hulking corpse so it didn't roll on top of him and crush him under the weight. He had done the impossible. And he would show King Eurystheus that his impossible labors were no match for him. He would win his wife's affection once again and rebuild their family. It was the only thing he had to live for. Hercules got to work skinning the lion. Hercules strode through King Eurystheus's city gates proudly. His shoulders were draped in the skin of the Nemean lion. The lion's head rested on Hercules' head like a war helmet, its bared teeth on display across Hercules' forehead. Its otherworldly fur glistened in the bright, high sun. Hercules could see people trembling, eyes wide with awe. No one had ever gotten a look at the beast up close and lived to tell the tale. No one had thought he was going to return alive, but here he was, standing tall. Hercules strode up the steps to hand the skin over to the king. King Eurystheus rose from his marble throne to meet him.
"Well done, Hercules."
Hercules dropped the skin at the king's feet and looked up at him, defiant, ready for his next challenge.
"I didn't expect to see you again," the king said warily.
Hercules could feel the eyes of Eurystheus's queen on him. In fact, all of the women were eyeing him with a combination of attraction and wonder. He was an unusual specimen. Hercules could see that Eurystheus was also looking at him with fear. How was Hercules possible? He could tell the man didn't want to be too close to him.
"You are not to come back through the gates of this city, you beast. I don't trust you around my citizens."
The king spoke adamantly and sharply. Hercules' jaw dropped in shock. He knew he was going to be challenged with more tasks, but he did not anticipate being treated like a beast himself.
"You murdered your children. Now you murder a beast that is impossible to kill. You must be treated like the wild and vile animal you are."
King Eurystheus waved to the soldiers he had standing by. They rushed to surround Hercules. He watched the crowd take a step back from him, suddenly wary of the man who was capable of so much destruction. The soldiers bound his hands, tying them behind his back.
"You will receive your commands through a messenger. I will send a herald to apprise you of your next labor. And if you manage to accomplish this, you will receive your next one. But you will never see me again face to face. You will not be acknowledged as a hero by any of our people."
The soldiers pulled him roughly back outside of the city to a lowly cell, a dingy hovel reserved for slaves, and they slammed the gate behind them. Leaving him to rot for all they cared, there was no way out for Hercules. And that night, he got word that for his next task, he was going to have to slay a 9-headed hydra, a hydra whose heads were immortal. Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. And now, back to Tales. Over the next 12 years, Hercules endured hardship beyond measure as he completed his labors. His spirit would break, but each time he thought of his innocent children and returning to Megara, he was spurred on once again. He defeated the Hydra and the dreaded Cretan bull, but he couldn't have done it alone. He had interventions from many gods, but never Hera, who watched Hercules struggle closely. Finally, the last labor was finished and he was free to go. He had paid his debt to society. Hercules returned to Thebes a changed man. The solitude had become a part of his very being. He no longer knew the comfort of touch or conversation. He had been broken, reduced to a mere weapon. He was no longer a son, a father, a husband, but he was going to try. He went straight to her. Mercifully, she opened the door to receive him. Megara had changed too. Her face had lines, lines formed by grief and worry. It also looked like she had passed through the doors of death.
"Hello, Hercules."
Hercules knelt at her feet.
"Hello, my love."
She looked away and gestured for him to stand up. She wasn't interested in some romantic gesture. He obliged, still hopeful he could turn things around.
"Why are you here?"
she asked. Her voice was hollow and empty.
"I came to tell you that I am a free man. I have served my time in punishment and return a reformed man, ready to start again."
Megara shook her head, as if that was the most ridiculous thing she had ever heard.
"I wish you had thrown me in the fire that day. I have been dead inside every day since then. I have nothing to say to you."
Hercules watched her, stunned. How could she not see that they were both in pain? They had both endured loneliness and misery.
"But Hera cast a spell on me while I slept. I told you this."
"Do not blame another for your actions." Megara looked at him coldly and turned away.
"My queen, we are both broken. Let us heal and get through this together."
Hercules watched her go back to her chambers. Guards closed the door behind her, preventing Hercules from following. There went the last remaining hope he had in the world. Hercules had not known where to go when Megara sent him away, and he didn't care anymore. He had heard the news that his former archery teacher, Aretas, was now king in Oikalia. Hercules decided he would go there. The day Hercules arrived in Oikalia, he arrived to quite the spectacle. The people were abuzz. King Aretas had presented a contest to the people, and the prize was his daughter Iole's hand. Hercules dismounted from his horse and strode to the arena where the proceedings were being held. He had not been able to get Megara out of his mind, but hoped a new wife would help him forget her. He had to move on.
"Well, if it isn't my old pupil."
Hercules heard Aretas's voice booming over the crowd as he made his way to the front. The old man seemed delighted to see him.
"It's been some time," Hercules agreed.
His days as a young pupil full of potential and promise seemed like several lifetimes ago.
"Would you like to vie for my daughter's hand?"
the archery teacher asked with a sly smile. Hercules could tell that Aretas was eager to prove his domination in the field of archery. Beating Hercules would prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was indomitable. Hercules looked to the stands where the Princess Iole was awaiting her future husband. His heart ached. Iole had a kind, lovely face. He would gladly win her hand and start a new life.
"I will gladly vie for her hand," Hercules announced and stepped forward.
King Aretas clapped his hands.
"Very well, then."
Fanfare began as the crowd made way for the two opponents to face off. Hercules went first. He launched an arrow into the air. It landed on the target squarely, perfectly. The crowd was pulling for their king, but Hercules was used to feeling like an outcast. He didn't need the support. He had his talent, and he was going to win. King Aretas stood next to Hercules. He was clearly a seasoned archer, but he was old. He was no match for a demigod. He steadied his hand and gaze and released his arrow. It didn't even hit the target. The crowd watched, hushed, embarrassed for their king.
"Again, Best 2 out of 3!
Aratus cried out. Hercules frowned, trying not to let his anger get the best of him. He had just won, fair and square. Furiously, Hercules snatched another arrow and fired it off without even looking at the target. The arrow landed perfectly in the bullseye. King Aratus and the crowd watched in stunned silence. King Aratus squared his aim and fired again. He missed the target entirely yet again.
Sorcery! The king suddenly exclaimed. I never miss!
I had nothing to do with that, Hercules protested.
Hercules looked over at Iole, who suddenly had fear in her eyes. He knew what she was thinking. He had murdered his children. What else was he capable of?
You are a demigod. Who knows what tricks are up your sleeve? You put me under a spell of Zeus. Get out of my kingdom.
Aratus's guard surrounded Hercules and grabbed him roughly. He struggled, fury in his eyes. He wished he could murder the old man with his look.
You shall never set foot here again.
Hercules glanced over at Iole one more time, who was being ushered away by her maids, as if looking at Hercules would sully her. And just like that, he was cast out again. Hercules felt an agony in his heart. If he did something well, he was punished. When he failed and his temper got the best of him, he was punished then as well. Hercules went far south to Tiryns, a place where no one would know him or his cursed past. A place where he passed his days in a haze, a stranger meandering the city, until one day...
Hercules!
Hercules looked around at the sound of his name. Who would be looking for him?
Hercules!
He heard his name again. Finally, he spotted the man calling for him. It was Iphitus, son of Aratus. Had he come to apologize? Offer Iole's hand as he had promised? Hercules hastened to him. They had grown up together, had learned to hunt and shoot side by side. Hercules remembered those days fondly.
Iphitus, my old friend, what brings you to Tiryns?
It was clear from his dour expression that Iphitus was not here to reminisce about childhood.
You stole my father's cattle. You must return it at once.
Hercules' jaw dropped in disbelief.
What?
You heard me. Return the cattle at once, or you will be returned to Oikalia to receive your punishment there.
Suddenly, Hercules heard the cackle of Hera. He could feel her eyes boring down on him, relishing his misery, his inability to be accepted or understood anywhere he went. Was he going crazy?
Are you going to accept these wrongful allegations?
He could feel Hera whisper tauntingly in his ear.
You know me, Hercules insisted helplessly. I would never steal.
Iphitus shrugged.
The cattle went missing the night you left. You were furious with my father and have the capabilities to execute a theft of that nature. Who's to say what a murderer will or won't do?
Do it, Hercules. Kill him.
Hercules snapped. As Hera infused his brain with fury and wickedness, he ran towards Iphitus and shoved him to the ground. He kicked him in the ribs before picking him up and dragging him to the edge of a wall overlooking a street below.
Hercules, stop!
Iphitus begged, pleading for his life.
We can figure this out. Just return the cattle and no one will be upset.
Hercules grabbed him by the tunic and yanked him up, his feet dangling inches above the ground. He tossed him over the city wall. Iphitus's skull cracked, and blood poured out onto the streets. Onlookers looked up to meet Hercules' gaze as he looked down at the dead body of his childhood friend. We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now let's continue the story. After he murdered Iphitus, Hercules once again returned to the Oracle of Delphi, at her mercy, awaiting judgment. He wanted to atone and receive due punishment for his actions. He watched as her gauzy eyes became filled with the spirit of Apollo.
"Hercules, you shall be sold into slavery. The money that is paid will be given to King Aretas as compensation for his son's murder. That is all."
Before he knew it, she was already breezing away from him. Faceless men in helmets surrounded him, binding his hands, dragging him away like the piece of property he had now become. Hercules was sold to Omphale, queen of the Lydians. Omphale was fond of Hercules. She was a gregarious, sensuous woman. She didn't want to punish him.
"Hercules, I want you as my lover."
Omphale observed him, sucking the skin off a grape. She lounged supine on a luxurious daybed. Hercules had been able to deduce her desire from her actions, but Hercules had avoided her advances, keeping his distance from her lingering fingertips. He knew that it would make his life more difficult to deny the royal woman what she desired, but he also knew that he had suffered too much indignity and defeat. The last thing he wanted to do was be intimate with a woman who simply wanted his flesh.
"I'm sorry, Queen, but I cannot."
Her eyes flashed with anger, but she didn't say anything, just languidly ran her finger along the rim of her wine goblet.
"Very well. If you shall not satisfy me as a man, then you shall be treated as a woman."
Omphale stood up and walked to the corner of the room. She grabbed a large, billowing woman's tunic and threw it at Hercules.
"Put this on."
Hercules stared at it in disbelief. Surely she could not be serious. He started to pull it over his head nonetheless.
"No, you will wear it. Take off your toga."
Hercules stared at her. She didn't back down. She was dead serious. He stripped and put on the dress, feeling more humiliated than he had ever been.
"And now you shall spin wool."
She pointed to a spot on a bearskin rug where she expected him to endure his feminine servitude. Hercules looked back at her in shock. She nodded sternly. Hercules bore his emasculation with dignity. He never complained, and eventually, Omphale let him return to wearing men's clothes. If anything, she admired him for not succumbing to her sexual advances. She saw his noble spirit, and eventually they developed a friendly rapport. Some evenings, he even advised her in war strategies over wine. One night, she summoned him to drink with her.
"Hercules," Omphale said to him as they looked out over her queendom from the palace balcony, "it is time to let you go."
Hercules regarded her incredulously.
"But it's only been 3 years. I thought you were going to keep me here forever."
The queen didn't make eye contact with him.
"Do not let me change my mind. You are a troubled man, but you are not beyond hope. Go, marry. Have another family. Have another chance at happiness."
Hercules watched to make sure that she was serious, but she stood up and walked swiftly back to her chambers. She was done with him. Hercules headed to Caledonia, a place where no one knew him, where he could perhaps have a fresh start. He had gotten wind that King Aeneas was looking for someone to take the hand of his daughter, Deianira. Now even Hera looked down on Hercules with some degree of sympathy. He had been nothing but an outcast his entire life, and she was, if anything, growing weary of rooting against the man. Deianira was delighted to meet Hercules, and they were swiftly married. Hercules was happier than he ever thought he could be. He had thought he only had dark days ahead, but now he was starting afresh. New life coursed through him. Deianira fell equally as in love with Hercules and wanted to do whatever she could to keep this powerful hero by her side. They would go on long walks in the hills surrounding Caledonia and talk about their future, the children they would have. One day, Deianira sauntered into a field to pick flowers while Hercules dozed under a tree next to a brook, soaking up the soft afternoon breeze and lazy sun. Hercules startled awake. His wife screamed his name. He sprinted towards the sound and saw a centaur trying to rape her. The centaur had pushed Deianira up against a tree, her dress ripped off. Hercules saw red yet again. He could not bear to see any violence towards his bride, and now this beast was defiling and violating her. Hercules ran towards the half-man, half-horse creature, pulling an arrow into his bow. The arrow landed squarely in the heart of the centaur. He collapsed on his side, dead. Deianira ran to Hercules and fell into his arms. "Come." Hercules held out his hand to his bride.
"Wait a moment. He grabbed my shawl and I want it back," she said.
Hercules nodded. Deianira walked over to retrieve her gauzy cover-up, and as she knelt to pick it up, saw that the centaur was still breathing, barely.
"I am sorry, my lady,"
the centaur managed to get out.
"I was wrong. Please take this as an offering of forgiveness. It is a love potion. Put it on any garment of your husband's, and he shall love you forever."
"He will love me forever."
Deianira frowned at the insinuation. The centaur smiled.
"Hercules wanted Iole. That's the real reason he killed Iphitus."
He handed her a small vial of liquid and then took his last breath. Deianira watched as his eyes fluttered shut. That night, when she was alone, the centaur's words haunted her. Maybe she should do it. She supposed that it wouldn't hurt to try, just in case he did still harbor feelings for Iole. She sprinkled the love potion all over Hercules' tunic. When he put it on the next day, surely that would seal their bond forever. She fell asleep with a small smile on her face. The next morning, Deianira awoke to wretched howls of pain and torture. She ran to their dressing chambers and found Hercules in his tunic, writhing on the ground. He was sweating, his skin red and patchy. A vicious rash was taking over his body.
"Poison!"
Hercules screamed, thrashing and tearing into his skin, trying to relieve the immense pain. Deianira's eyes widened in horror. It wasn't a magical elixir. She had covered the tunic in poison. The centaur had tricked her on his deathbed. When Hercules took the tunic off, he was in even more excruciating pain. Water inflamed it further. It was taking over his body, and there was nothing they could do.
"Make a funeral pyre, my love. It is my time."
Deianira burst into tears. She was murdering the love of her life. As Hercules' pain and delirium increased by the moment, everyone sprung into action. A pyre was erected immediately. Hercules was barely himself. He was erratic, driven insane by the centaur's black magic. As Hercules prepared himself to be cast into the fire, he could barely recognize his wife. He barely could make sense of anything. The poison had seeped into his brain, and he was losing his grip on reality. He leapt into the pyre. As soon as his body caught fire, he could hear his screams, but he no longer felt pain. Suddenly, he felt calm. He could see vice and virtue float past. They smiled at him. He had made the right choice after all. His life had been hard, but it was indeed glorious. He saw Hera, his nemesis, his cruel enemy, looking at him with the kindest eyes he had ever seen. She reached out her hand with such deep sympathy and compassion and gently laid a finger on his forehead.
"My son," she said, "you have suffered enough. You suckled at my breast, and you will know immortality. Please sit with us on Mount Olympus now."
As Hercules felt his spirit leave his body at long last, he knew he would miss Deianira, miss fathering her children, but his life had been cursed. He knew that it was time to go. He saw his father, Zeus, smiling, ready to embrace his son. Hercules was free. These episodes only scratch the surface of Hercules' adventures, setbacks, and accomplishments. There are infinitely more, including some variations on what we explored here. Perhaps there are even more that were told aloud but never recorded and were lost to time. Hercules' presence looms in our societal imagination as a great warrior, a child of the greatest god of all. But perhaps it's time to take some lessons from his failures and vulnerabilities as well. Because when you become a legendary warrior in spite of hardship, loss, and immeasurable suffering, then you become a true hero. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more Tales, you can find us and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory or listen on Parcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, we'd truly appreciate a 5-star review. We'll see you next time. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler, additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Gina Machusik. I'm Vanessa Richardson.